For the past 14 years, May has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to political conspiracies. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California. And now, May Brussel.
Good afternoon. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California. It's August the 15th, 1977, and it's Dialogue Conspiracy number 282. I'm going to talk today and next week a two-part series on mind control, the American assassins, again, a theme that I have gone over and over, different parts of it on Dialogue Conspiracy over the years. But a classical case is the emergence of the Son of Sam. And I want to go into some of the history of the study of violence in California. I believe that Son of Sam is a product of moving that school that was supposed to be at UCLA in 1973 to South Korea and also in the Philippines. There was a school for turning these monsters out and bringing them home to America for these violences, and I'll go into the reasons I believe that this is the case. I think Son of Sam is a good name. I think he's the son of Uncle Sam. He is a new breed of American killers that we've seen on the scene since the creation of the Charles Manson family. I believe the violence that we're seeing in America, this type of violence, is a combination of CIA and military science. I believe that these killers are without motives because they didn't start out as killers created in the nursery and their school environment to be killers. They had alternating personalities. They changed at some point drastically. It all began with the chemicals. You've been hearing stories that have all of a sudden been suppressed. They came out and then suppressed that the CIA spent $26 million on LSD experiments at 54 institutions. And yet no journalist is asking, where did the money go? We have the names of five institutions it went to, and one of them was to Dr. Jolly West at UCLA, and I want to go into that at length, either this week or next week if I have time. But we have not examined the recipients of this $26 million test, and the point is that after the tests are over, then the people that have been used are put out to do their thing, and for the purposes of spreading their violence and bringing on a police force, and the news media eats it up, it becomes synchronized into a very serious operation that has to be watched because it will be growing. I wrote in the Realist, the very first article I ever published after 9 years research, the one called Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? It was a three-part article, and the second part that went along with the Watergate story was called The American Assassins Are Mutations. And Paul Krasner changed the word, are not mutations. That's about the only word he changed when he published the article. And I sincerely meant that the assassins used in America are mutations. I looked up in my dictionary again for the program today, although I had done it a long time ago, the large Random House dictionary. A mutant is a, by definition, is somebody undergoing or the result of mutation. And mutation is the act or the process of changing, change or altering in form, the qualities or the nature. A sudden departure from a parent type, as when an individual from its parents, caused by a change in a gene or chromosome. Well, when the Random House Dictionary came out, that large one, which was about 6 or 7 years ago, it didn't include the mutations that take place through the scientific laboratories, the medical institutes, and the organizations that are being given the CIA money, our tax money, for mutations. We can now change and make a sudden departure from a certain kind of personality, from what he was when he was growing up, to become the other person that does all the violences. You saw that with Charles Watson at the time of the murders of Sharon Tate. An ordinary, quiet schoolboy, Boy Scout, churchgoer, the pillar of community when he was young, has a changed personality and is able to stab and mutilate and kill seven people for no apparent reason. To mutate is to change or alter, and this is what is happening. Persons in this country are going through a mutation. And to mutilate is to disfigure and make imperfect by removing or irreparable damaging parts. We are mutilating minds, definitely mutilating minds and disfiguring them and removing part of the brain, and this is an important thing that is happening today. In the article on the American assassins, I'll just read you a couple of sentences, because what I wrote there applies for all future murders, all future assassinations, and what I call the CIA crimes. I said the American assassin is a different variety than history ever produced before. This mongrel is not a purebred Nazi, but the deformed and hideous baby produced from the marriage of Nazi General Reinhard Gehlen and his mistress Alan Dulles, who formed the CIA. It has taken a long time to recognize just what is different about this creation, whose birth followed a quickie ceremony immediately after World War II. The parents of these mutations, who helped finance Adolf Hitler's ascendancy, and the agencies who long for revenge and war against mankind, changed their domicile after World War II instead of being on the continent of Europe. But they didn't change their habits. They moved their nursery to produce new babies from Germany into the United States and into Jamaica. And you see these studies, I'll interject here, I wrote this in 1972, but in 1977 you see that the CIA did move into the United States, and they are using many German Nazi doctors in our laboratories to have done this $25 million research on LSD alone. I said, if other parts of the world have their elaborate plots, none of them equal our murders or attempted murders or accidents or the masterminds behind them. Our American assassins are hired as decoys. Then they are either killed or they are isolated in their cages. That's the way Sam is now, for 30 days separated from every person in the prison. The lone assassin then becomes like an animal, and he's dissected by the Pentagon social scientists and psychiatrists. I'm going to read you some sentences of the head psychologist of New York City Police Department in the case of Sam. I said that selected attorneys and privileged biographers then write their histories, and soon the puppet media, the puppet mass media, and other experts begin to pick up the lingo, and they pass along misinformation about these people as facts. And while this human being is being turned into a patsy who is monitored every second and isolated until his death, a group of covert agents manufacture what are supposed to have been his motives for becoming the assassin. The fictitious personality will be studied and is supposed to become the model of assassins that America has produced in the 60s and 70s. There is a set pattern of personality traits to describe these people. The biographical profile can be used for future murders if other candidates threaten the occupant in the White House. Well, this article is a long one. Someday I may just read it on the air to refresh your memory. If you don't remember the article, The American Assassins Are Mutations. But what I was trying to say in 1972 is what is taking place today in a very diabolical form. Along with the idea of assassins, to show you just how far they've come along with this process, knowing that certain individuals are selected as patsies and the true murderers get off free or are concealed, and the law enforcement and the military behind them are concealed. There was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle Sunday, August the 14th, 1977, called The Nightmare World, The Church, The Nightmare World Church, and you might want to look that up at your libraries if you have the microfilm copies in the newspapers there. It's about a minister in California who just skipped down to Guyana with his million-dollar missionary. His name is Jim Jones, and he's tied to a lot of politicians in California. And he's been the father to thousands of people in his church. He's acquired 25 pieces of property in Ukiah, that's in California. And in Mendocino, he has more than 500,000 in California and 1,000,000 in a Guyana mission. Those of you who heard Dialogue Conspiracy last week know how I talked about the right-wing church funding missionaries in Mexico, where assassins were trained, and it could be that that school for missionaries in Oaxaca, Mexico, is closed up, and now the Guyana mission would be a place for assassins to run. And the reason I say that is that one of the things that Jim Jones does as a minister is to get the members of the congregation to sign confessions that they were part of a crime, and they signed these papers saying that they committed crimes, and they had blank sheets of paper as members of the church, and there are thousands of members of the church that could be used by the temple in any way they wanted. They were asked to just sign their name to blank sheets of paper. Then they were asked to sign confessions to crimes, which included molesting their own children, But they were to sign confessions that they conspired to kill the president or overthrow the government. An example is a woman who works at a radio station, makes $1,000 a month. She lives on a commune run by Jim Jones and his church, and she gets $2 a week for spending money and buys clothes, used clothes at a rag shop, and goes back and sleeps at the commune and lives there and gives her entire paycheck to this church. And there's people there that have been there for quite a few years now. He takes all of their money. They either live with him on the premise or off the premise, and they spy on each other and turn on information from each other. And they have a joint communal punishment where the priest gets up on the podium and calls their names, and people get up to 300 beatings, children 4 years of age up to 50 years of age with a board. A 200-pound woman beats them, and a microphone is put at their mouth to hear them scream so that everyone in the congregation hears the screams. This is like Nazi Germany. I really have thought seriously that the very first book I write will be titled Without Armbands or Marching. I don't think the story of this country has really been told or put together yet by enough people. I try to do it and take all these newspapers and pick up these items. But can you imagine a family being called up and accusing members of their family when the name is called out? A member of the family takes them up to the podium and they all yell at them and call them names. And Jones yells, hit them harder, and they're whipped. And among the other things, the deprivation and the pain and the humiliation and poverty, which they stand, they have to stay there. They can't leave because they stand to lose everything. It's all invested in the church. They have to sign papers that they conspired to kill the president of the United States. Now, Son of Sam has not gone into political assassinations, but as soon as he was arrested, there were two more killings of people sitting in a car in New York. The killings haven't stopped. There's a lot of Sams. There's one in Seaside, California, just a few miles from where KLRB is, where four people were killed. And we were told by the police chief that absolutely no maniac did the crime. That was on the news here in Carmel today. They don't have a suspect, but they're assuring us that there's no maniac killing four people. Imagine a grandmother and a mother and two daughters slit and stabbed to death many, many times with blood all over the house. A nice church-going, quiet woman, one who works in the park system, another the grandmother visiting, decent family in a home that four can't get out of. For some reason, they're submissive, and it doesn't seem anything that's taken from the house. And the police chief tells us there absolutely is no maniac. We're supposed to believe the other side of the coin is that that's a perfectly normal killing. If there's no maniac involved and no deranged person, this was the quotation on the news today, no deranged person did this, then it's become perfectly normal to go in and take a mother, a grandmother, and two children and stab them to death, cut them up in as many as pieces as you want with blood all over the place and walk out and tell the community that there's no deranged person. It's about as sane as the Gestapo or the Knight of Glass in Germany where Hitler unleashed his people and they went out into the streets and broke everything in the homes and shattered them and cut people up. And I'm sure that Adolf Hitler would tell the media there's no deranged Nazis. And that's what you're seeing in America when the media tells you that we're perfectly safe, that this was a sane kind of way to die. Well, the Son of Sam covers the same pattern as all the American assassinations, and that's why I read you about the American assassin. He's just a little test tube baby out on the streets. And I've broken the story so far this week into these subjects that we'll go into. The police knew in advance and could have had Sam on June 26th and yet allowed the murder of Stacy Moskowitz and the blinding of her date. Sam was supposed to have been seen with a companion. I learned that from a friend today who was listening to KGO radio that in Westchester County he was seen with a companion, which is similar to Lee Harvey Oswald and Arthur Bremer and James Earl Ray. They all had friends, Sirhan. They weren't alone. Somebody was pulling the strings, and it probably is that Sam indeed has companions. It wasn't alone. There are telltale letters around and diaries, evidence left in an open car, which is totally impossible. Letters to the police confirming he's the murderer, sitting on a car after he got a ticket on the fire hydrant. He goes to his apartment and leaves a machine gun and letters in a car. It's impossible. And we'll go into the weapons. No story yet of how he purchased all his ammunition and the contradictions in the weapons stories. And, of course, Sam worked for the police department and got his training, his LSD treatment, and personality change in the government. In comes the mysterious court-appointed attorney that always takes over the case and is right away way to make a buck and sell the tapes and confirm that Sam is the guilty one, even though we're not sure who did do all these killings. He's going into details about the killings, but the attorney is mysterious. And there's a man, a double for Sam, too. And just like in all the other conspiracy stories, a man that was taken off in handcuffs to the police department and was a double. And then, of course, the telephone hypnosis possibility and the wonderful capture in the movie rights, the book rights. It sounds just like all the other assassinations or murders or scripts, whether it's the Chowchilla story, the Manson story, the killing of Dr. Oda in California, the zebra killings. You name it, the violence pattern that's been set up for terrorism in this country has a set pattern, and if you fill in and change the names and the dates, you can solve these stories very quickly. As far as the police knowing in advance or the collusion in this matter, I read the Salt Lake Tribune and the San Jose Mercury. They had both had articles that an airline stewardess had a passenger with her on June 26th. And he introduced himself to her. They were going down to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And he told the airline stewardess that he was the son of Sam. At that point, five or six people had been killed, but they didn't have this July killing. This was June 26th. So the FBI and the police sent pictures or composites of Sam to 50 states. When the family was coming north to New York from Florida to see Sam after he was arrested, David Berkowitz is his name, a neighbor, Ted Rosen, of the family, gave an interview to the newspaper, and he said he had seen David Berkowitz 3 months ago on a visit, and he said June 26th, their son, the Berkowitz's son, had spent most of his visit going to Fort Lauderdale Beach. He'd been at Miami and been there. So these last murders, the murder and the blinding, could have been avoided because when he told her on the airplane that he was son of Sam, all they had to do is get the passenger list and the same person using the same name returned from Fort Lauderdale and went back to New York, and those murders could have been avoided. But that isn't a pattern that's alone or unique. The Manson family massacres could have been avoided. I met a sheriff in Los Angeles who was on Dialogue Conspiracy with me a couple of years ago who was in on the arrest of Charles Manson when they finally decided to go in after the killings of Sharon Tate and the LaBianca family. And he said the sheriffs all along knew that there were people around there with weapons and practicing and stories of murders and drugs and girls under 18 years of age and man on parole. And there were orders, don't touch the Manson family, because he knew they were getting ready for a kill. The only difference was that he was a white Christian and they were going to kill Black Panthers. And the sheriff's office was waiting for a kill and knew it, and all that could have been avoided if anyone spoke up. And then Joseph Romero and Russell Little were in Oakland and arrested January the 10th, 1974. And a house was burned down where Nancy Ling Perry lived and the SLA lived, and there was writing all over the house and walls and books, and a post office helmet of William Harris. Again, he worked at the post office like David Berkowitz. And there were the names and addresses, the names of William and Emily Harris and Angela and Gary Atwood and other members of the house that were burned down, the SLA house. And Colson Westbrook of the CIA, who worked 7 years with mind control and behavior modification, who worked in prison with Donald DeFries at Vacaville, produced pictures later of the Harrises visiting and Joseph Romero and Russell Little visiting Donald DeFries at Vacaville prison. He had all the pictures of the friends and members of the SLA that worked with Joseph Romero and Russell Little, and as the police had rounded those people up between January the 10th and February the 4th, there would be no kidnapping of Patty Hearst. It's just like the killings in New York City, the last big splash of David Berkowitz there. But this is a pattern that I've seen, and maybe some of you, if you study these other violences, would find that there was foreknowledge in those cases. They could have checked the post office job of William Harris, the job that Emily Harris had, or any one of those seven or eight members of the SLA, and rounded them up in Berkeley. They had cars, they had car licenses, they had jobs, identified them and looked for them and solved that problem earlier before Patty was kidnapped. Now, Sam Carr is the man who lived one story below David Berkowitz. And David claims that Sam directed him, that he took orders from him. Sam had the window just below him. He's the one who had the dog that was shot in the leg by David, but David might have shot the dog out of anger. Sam owned a telephone answering service, and I think that's interesting, and it should be checked out. And I will be sending a tape of Dialogue Conspiracy today. And next week, two sides to the Moskowitz family back there, because I think they should sue the police for not checking the January 25th lead or 26th lead anyway. But Sam has an answering service, and if you read the book, The Control of Candy Jones, which is so important, Candy got all her instructions on the telephone, and Sam was a messenger. He's the man that David Berkowitz said controlled him, who gave him his orders. He says, you send me out at night, I may do the killings, but you control me. This is what he wrote and said, send the letters, you're the man who controls me. So it's very interesting that a man who has a telephone service who agonizes David so much that he shoots his dog, maybe he wanted to actually shoot Sam because Sam was sending him. And he blamed Sam, even when the dog was shot in the leg. He didn't use the dog's name, whatever it is. He didn't say Fido controls him. In the omen, the script for this thing, it could be a dog tells a person to go out and do the murders. But the point is that Sam is the one giving the murders. He only shot the dog, and the dog didn't have a name. Sam Carr is the man who lives below, who is the answering service. And Sam Carr also told the police 3 weeks before the last killing that he thought David might be the one. And it may be that 3 weeks ago they were going to end this charade and wind it up, just like the Patty Hearst kidnapping, which I said 3 weeks to the day of evidence that they knew where she was, she would be pulled in, and it happened that way. And again, you get the similarity of people controlling the strings. 3 weeks to the day before the last killing, Sam Carr told the police, I think David might have the .44 caliber rifle. And the police went through their files and didn't confirm this phone call or not. This would be a piece of evidence that's missing or on the police logs, but he told them that he believed that the man upstairs from him was the person, and yet they had 3 weeks there and didn't do anything about that. Was Sam a loner? I don't know. As I said before, it was somebody told me that on KGO today, they said that he was at Westchester County with another person, and I know there's a double that was picked up right in Midtown, New York, and taken to the police station out in the precinct, and not in the Midtown, taken away in handcuffs. And they asked him his profession, and he said he was an artist. And they said, oh, we've got the right one, because the son of Sam had an artist kind of script. And he says, no, I'm an actor. And they said, oh, that's why you're Sam, because we think he wore wigs. And they took this man off because he fit the composite picture. But whether or not he knew him or worked as a double, I don't know. Time will tell who his companions are. But the man that they took off at the double was a Puerto Rican. And in the case of Sirhan and these other gentlemen, they were with swarthy men that appeared to be anti-Castro Cubans or could be Puerto Ricans. But in this case, the double was supposed to be a Puerto Rican. Now, the CIA comes out with their profiles, and this is the part that I wrote about in 1972, and this is what I can apply to the present time. This is taken, you know, from the New York Post, New York paper. It says, police were pleased about the psychological profile they had developed during the manhunt. The profiles were especially good. They were pretty accurate. Sam was a loner. Harry Schlossberg is the director of the Psychological Services, New York City Police. And it would be really nice to know if any of that LSD money or $25 million from the CIA went to Harvey Schlossberg. Because remember when Dr. Olson took LSD in New York, in Washington, D.C., as part of the experiment, and he began to go crazy and lose his mind, they didn't send him to a doctor in Washington. They sent him to a doctor in New York City, Dr. Abramson at Mount Sinai Hospital, who just came out to be a CIA doctor in the revelations of the Washington Post and New York Times in the last 2 weeks. In the list of the CIA institutions, they used a doctor from Mount Sinai Hospital to see this person. And it would be wonderful to know if Harvey Schlossberg, the director of psychological services, is part of that CIA team. He says it was so good and accurate because David Berkowitz was a loner. Well, every agent that works for the CIA doing this kind of work stays alone. Read Candy Jones' book, where she was an extroverted before extrovert. She was told to hate all blacks and not see them, to stay away from all Jews and not see them, to stay away from Italians because they smelled of garlic. She was told she couldn't go to a dentist, even if her teeth rotted. Even Howard Hughes couldn't see a dentist for 20 years. She couldn't go to a doctor. Howard Hughes couldn't go to anybody except the doctors that were sent by his guards to him. And if David Berkowitz didn't go out, what makes him different than all these other agents? She couldn't see anybody. She stayed alone inside the house, and all agents are loners. So there isn't anything great by the psychological services of New York police saying he was a loner. And then he said he was not red-eyed or foaming at the mouth. Well, neither was James Earl Ray or Sirhan Sirhan or Lee Harvey Oswald or Jack Ruby or Candy Jones. Candy Jones was taken to Taiwan where she was tortured. She was taken to the CIA offices in Maryland, right outside of Washington, D.C., where they put her on a table and put carrots in her vagina and did demonstrations and undressed her in front of men, the head of the CIA. You have to read this book to see what they did to her. And she didn't blink an eyelash. A woman that's prim and proper actually had physical experimentations done upon her and comes out smiling and doesn't hate those people. And she's on New York radio 5 nights a week and talks about her book and barely goes into the things that she wrote about what they did to her in the way of torture to her hands and her body and her vagina. And she wasn't red-eyed or foaming at the mouth. She was a model for Conover. She was a sweet housewife with 2 children who was given a double personality and sent out to see people like Jimmy Hoffa and told to kill herself, just like this David Berkowitz was going to have his big slam before he got himself done in and wanted to die. He said he was going to have his big killing and then die, like a kamikaze thing. These assassins aren't red-eyed or foaming. They're trained not to be. That's the purpose of 26 years of work and $26 million, is to keep them cool, keep them in your community. Take your sons and husbands and daughters and turn them into killers, and that's what they're doing. And they look like everybody else except they're time bombs, and they're going to explode, and they're exploding in every city in America until you really will be able to see the pattern if you pinpoint what doctors they saw. Now, this doctor in New York City, the director of the psychological services, said that their assassin, they figured out before they caught him, he wouldn't stand out in any way, that he wasn't conspicuous. None of these people were. The SLA people that picked up Patty Hearst, she's living with her boyfriend in Berkeley and taken in the middle of the night screaming half naked. One works in an ecology place at a park in Berkeley, Camilla Hall. One works at the Transamerica building. Angela Atwood, waiting tables in San Francisco. Emily Harris worked at a polling office in Berkeley. We never found out what that was. I think that was a CIA front. It's never been exposed or even revealed for what it was. And William Harris worked at as a post office. And what did they do? They took this woman out of her home and put her in a closet and gave her acid. And her mind was distorted. She talked about the visions and the things she saw and locked her up for 45 days and read her harrowing tales and clanked machine guns in her ears. And when she came out of the closet, 7 days later, she's raiding the Hibernia Bank, and she becomes a notorious criminal. None of these people stood out in any way. They were part of the Berkeley community. Angela Hall and Ms. Moon, and, you know, they didn't look like somebody who could take somebody out of their home and disrupt their lives and ruin, you know, the spirit of their families who live in fear of death all the time now. These people don't stand out in any ways. And then this great profile in New York City, the expert said neighbors thought he was a nice boy who kept to himself. Well, Candy was a nice woman and kept to herself. And they tell her to jump off of a place out of Paradise Island and crack her head open and die. They have a profile they've used in every one of these stories, every one of these conspiracies you can compare to the last. They say he was in a job that was not well-paying job, which didn't give him gratification. The CIA hasn't yet taken any bank presidents and turned them into assassins. Not yet. They may. They take people that are losers or people that are easily given to hypnosis or people that are brought into this country as a citizenship, like the anti-Castro Cubans or the white Russians or Palestinians, because they want their home brought back to them. They want the communists out. They can be told the country's going to the dogs. You can take a man in Chicago whose father was in Auschwitz and turn him into a Nazi to embarrass his father and lead the Nazi party being a Jew. Or you can take this Berkowitz man and turn him into a monster, a Jesus freak, and then a killer, wants to be a mass killer. His father owned a hardware store and was retired. And David Berkowitz didn't have a well-paying job, but they don't tell you where he bought that car. He had a pretty new Ford there. It wasn't a Volkswagen bus or bug. It looked like he had a pretty nice car, and they don't tell you how he paid his rent, I think, for 1 or 2 years in advance. He had put up a big amount for the rent, and he went to Houston Texas. He traveled and visited a friend. It's true he lived in one room, but so did Lee Harvey Oswald and Arthur Bramer. And all of these people, they were stalked and kept in one room and went out at night. But that was the pattern the CIA set up for one and it set up for all. The New York psychologist said they hadn't caught some of Sam, and they were predicting that he would be sort of separate and couldn't relate to the world. They're ordered to be separate. This is just hogwash. They're drugged, they're hypnotized, they're given sodium pentothal, they're told to be suspicious. Candy Jones was told, say, be suspicious of everybody, don't see anybody, stay separate. What would keep Lee Harvey Oswald in his room all day for 4 months and then go out to see anti-Castro Cubans at night and never be seen, you know, at parks or take his wife or his child to restaurants? And agents that have lived in Carmel Valley that I've known, they stay separate. They don't take their families out. They're not part of the community or the PTA or anything going on here. They lead separate lives so they won't be identified later. The profile put out by the New York City police on the kind of person that would be picked up, and they're patting themselves on the back as being a great job. They said they were so pleased that they developed this profile during the manhunt, and yet it came right out of Langley, Virginia. It was in Virginia, not Maryland, where Candy Jones was taken for these experiments. And, of course, Lee Harvey Oswald, who never had a diary, whose original diary has yet never been found. And Sirhan Sirhan said he didn't write his diary, and Arthur Bremer's diary is insane. All of these alleged assassins left diaries. What did David Berkowitz leave? He got his car parked at the time that the Moskowitz murder, and he got a ticket at the fire hydrant, so his car had been marked. But then afterwards, a few weeks later, he goes to his apartment. It's on the 7th floor in New York City. He parks his car on the street, and he leaves the door open, which is practically never done in New York City or San Francisco or L.A. because people rip parts out of the cars. And it's almost impossible that David Berkowitz, at that moment, left his door open, and along comes a detective, Ed Zigo and John Longo, and they open the car door. Miracle of miracles, a .45 caliber submachine gun is on the seat of the car. Another miracle, as luck would have it, a note was on the seat for whoever wanted to see it, and this was a four-page letter. This wasn't any ordinary note, and it was found on the seat of his car, addressed to the Suffolk County Police Department, Long Island. The police printed in the same handwriting used in the previous communications. It warned of impending attacks, and it signed Son of Sam. Wasn't that nice of Sam to leave his gun and his letters open? He didn't even lock them up or take them in. Where did he get his gun? He bought it in Houston, Texas. He bought the gun, the .44, in Houston. He has a friend there who works for a security system. Another link to the police, the security system. The SLA was full of them. Everybody's friend was a guard or security person. They asked him, "What did you buy the gun in your name?" He says, "Oh, no, do you think I'm crazy?" You know, he didn't want to be identified. He had a friend buy the gun, and he got it from the friend. He went all the way to Houston, Texas. Isn't it strange that these violences, this syndrome, are coming from California, Houston, and Florida? Those are the big pits of mind control. They may send assassins out all over the country, but this is where it's really getting down to perfecting the techniques. And I wonder about his trip to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in June, before he did the last murder. But he said, "Do you think I'm crazy to buy a gun and walk in myself and buy it? I had a friend buy it." But yet, he ordered a mail order rifle that he's going to be doing some shooting with, it on the outside. It says rifle. So in New York City, he can obtain rifles. He can go to Sears Roebuck or any store, hunting store, and buy a rifle. And he did buy a rifle by mail order. Therefore, he didn't mind being identified there. So he didn't have to go all the way to Houston to buy the other gun. If he's going to buy one, he can buy the other. So buying the gun in Houston has another story. I don't know why he went that far, but it may have been part of the programming. Something happens in Houston, Texas, and it was after he got home from Houston, that 3 weeks later, he sat on it and started his first killing. Now, there hasn't been any mention about the ammunition. He was going to kill 50 to 150 people at a discotheque this summer. He had 180 rounds of ammunition. There isn't a word about any of these assassins where they bought their ammunition. Lee Harvey Oswald or James Earl Ray or Sirhan, they got their weapons, but it's always a secret who supplied the ammunition, who knew them or who saw them. Now, this David has a friend who's a security officer in Mackinac, Michigan, at the Michigan College at Mackinac. And he was interviewed, and Paul Willow, and he said how Sam worked, I call him Sam, it's David Berkowitz, worked for the federal government as a post office clerk, and later that was confirmed that he was. Sarah Jane Moore worked with alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. She was with the agents about gang rifles the morning that she came back and took a shot at Gerald Ford. She worked with the FBI as an informant for the Feed the Poor program at the time of the Hearst kidnapping. She was an informant that spread rumors about Popeye Jackson, who was later killed, president of the United Prisoners Union. Sarah Jane Moore worked for the government. Willie Wolfe worked for the government. David Berkowitz worked for the government. And before he worked for the government, he worked in the police department as a police auxiliary, and he was a former security guard, and he guarded for surveillance for just the kind of crimes that were coming down. One of his jobs was to be a guard. The attorney who's on the case, Mr. Philip Peltz, came right in and was beginning to offer the sale of tapes. Remember how quickly Patty Hearst was taped the minute she was in the cell, and they didn't sell those tapes, but they certainly broadcast them, and people made money in the newspaper business about the tapes of Patty Hearst talking to her friend. And I think that it's important to know that somebody gets right in and bugs these people and is able to commercialize or use it for the jury later or the trials, and shouldn't be allowed in the jail at all. This Mr. Philip Peltz is a beauty, the attorney that ran in to take care of me. He already was convicted of 4 felony counts, a stock fraud case, and he was in the federal penitentiary. He was convicted of supplying the services of a prostitute to an official of the Security Exchange Commission. And in return, the officials gave Peltz information about Security Exchange investigations, and he used the information for further illegal manipulations. That brings me to Donald DeFries, who ran a house of prostitution in Compton in Los Angeles when he worked for the criminal conspiracy section of the Los Angeles Police Department. It was miles from where he was killed, between the airport and the house where DeFries was to be killed by the LAPD. And he supplied black women for men that worked at the Customs Department at the LA airport. And I wonder what slipped by the customs, like narcotics or whatever, that the customs men were fixed with their goodies. And that was his job. So the attorney, Peltz, was supplying the services of prostitutes for the Security Exchange Commission, and Donald DeFries was doing the same thing in California. Nobody yet can find out how Peltz got into the case. He wouldn't say. It's a big mystery, and it's always a mystery in these assassinations how these particular attorneys get into the cases, who calls them in the first place. These assassination attorneys have their own techniques of keeping the evidence out and bringing in people, the witnesses that hide the truth but convict the person. The person, their client, always gets convicted, and the truth is concealed, and these attorneys are geniuses. I think the complications of the way Melvin Belli got into the Jack Ruby case, and I think I'll go on with the story of Sam now and maybe discuss that with you sometime, just do a show on how the attorneys get into these cases. Now, Sam's case, or David Berkowitz's case, if you read the papers, is a clear-cut case of being programmed. I mean, that is so obvious. He says, I was out to kill. It was my job to kill. Sam told me to do it. Sam sent me on the assignments. I had to do what I had to do. I had to take orders when he sent me. Sam was a white male, he says. Now, this story about getting orders through Carr's dog are really interesting, because he says he got it through his dog. I got the messages through his dog. But it was Sam who really, he said it was through Sam Carr's dog. He's really a man who lived 6,000 years. Now that little sentence there takes all the attention away from David Berkowitz and what happened in these mind control schools in South Korea. That just makes him look so ridiculous that he'll never have to stand a trial. And like DeSapio at the time of the Boston Strangler case, he never went to trial. And there wasn't enough proof that he did the stranglers, and he never went to trial. Well, in this case, if he says Sam lived 6,000 years ago, then you see, you can't even hate the man. Mr. Moskowitz says, I can't be mad that he killed my daughter, because look at, he thinks a dog did it. And that makes the whole thing so ridiculous. Nobody would think this was an experiment on mind control. But he went on and told the police he loved young blood. He signed his letters with S, which was also Satan, which we have a lot of in the California murders where they've tested these zombies. He said, Sam commands me. I'll tell you, he says, when I take these orders, I run. That's what he said. And he tells about killing the women. He didn't want to hit the men, but he wanted to hit the women. He singled out the women and not the men. And I think that's interesting because at the time that Dr. Marcus Foster was killed in Oakland, the SLA, they wanted the black man. They didn't want the white man. His friend Mr. Blackburn was with him that he had worked with for many years. And they used cyanide bullets on the black man and regular bullets on the white man, so the white man lived. So this selective killing can be used in many, many ways, and it works quite effectively. He went each case after the woman, and he left the man. Sam was arrested on Wednesday in the Bronx, and he said that he had been out then looking for a sign to kill again. The situation would be, I would find a parking place for my car right away. And it was things like that that convinced me it was commanded. Now, there's people I know in New York City that will park their car in front of a theater, a certain section in town. If a friend is going, and there's services that'll do it for you, they're paid to do it, and then they pull away and leave a space for you when you come, and you have a place to park at night for the theater. There's no trick for getting a car to park if you want somebody to kill in that neighborhood. He said, I wanted to get a victim last week, and he waited to get a sign. I always had the perfect spot. It fell into place. Did you feel remorse for murdering seven people? Why should I? It was commanded. Sam told me to do it. Sam told me to kill. Remember, Sam Carr is a man downstairs, not the dog. See, and he said, I got my first calling. I went to Houston, Texas, and got the gun and came home for the first shooting. A month later, after coming home from Houston, I got my first calling, and then I went to look for a spot. And he goes on, and as I said, says he is not sad about this because he was commanded by Sam. Well, this person changed their personality in the Army, and I think next week I'll go into some more detail on David Berkowitz and send it back to the police and to the family, particularly in New York City. We'll go into why they had to bring him in at this time, why the hoax was over, they had to end it. And we'll do more about David Berkowitz because it's a classic example of the CIA and their mind control. And like the assassinations that are taking place in this country, we'll see more and more of this in the future. So it's good to go slowly and study a lot of it as we go along. Well, the time is up. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy. Keep the fire away, too. We have to keep the fire away.
I thought to myself, while driving down Route 68, the car in front is a Renault, it's not behind, it's not a Ford, there is a truth of how things happen. If it was yesterday, it wasn't 1894, and if tomorrow's gonna to come true, there'll be another truth in store. And those who think there is no truth, that all depends on point of view. We'll lock us up, fire the bomb, made only for a gentleman to use. The president is just a choice. He should not incite or claim his fame. One November night, I heard the screaming horns. A new America had changed her name. We're not the same. You and I are not. You who call free thinkers enemies. You are clearly now the enemies, and we will do what we must do to keep it free, like I was right. And she must sing, and they must slave. You must have heard that we will never really rise again. The mind behind the plastic bugles gave the word. They cannot just mow us down. It's they who are the arch-anemic ones. Ours are free. Ours are mountain climbing sons. So you and I, we disagree. Truth exists, but misery. I cry for you, I cry for us, as I prepare to leave the bus. Feast our eyes.